Hey there, dudes and dudettes, and welcome to Tubular Time Machine, the podcast that cranks the nostalgia dial all the way to 11. I'm your host, Jason Raz Rasmussen, and each week we jump into our gnarly retro ride and rocket back to a specific year between 1971 and 2010, reliving the rad of music, movies, TV shows, video games, toys, slang, and pop culture moments that made growing up in the U.S. so totally bodacious. But I'm not flying solo. Every episode features a special co-host who is exactly 14 years old that year, ready to dish on everything from mixtapes and mall food courts to butterfly clips and blowing into NES cartridges like a wizard. So grab your slap bracelet, rewind your cassette, and fire up the Tubular Time Machine theme song, where the past is always rad and the vibes never go out of style. This week on Tubular Time Machine, we're rewinding all the way back to 2001, and I've got the perfect co-pilot to guide us through the pop culture of that unforgettable year. Joining me is someone I first connected with through our mutual obsession, reality TV. He's a full-on reality show junkie, watching shows like The Amazing Race, Big Brother, The Challenge, and of course, Survivor. If it's got alliances, tribal councils, or confessionals, he's there for it. Kyle Jackson became a Survivor fan in the most legendary way possible. Right after the Ravens won the Super Bowl in January 2001, CBS aired Survivor, The Australian Outback, and from that moment on, he was hooked. He was just 14 at that time, soaking in early 2000s pop culture through the lens of a teenager, and today he's here to share all those memories with us. So grab your buffs and your dial-up connection, because we're diving into 2001 with Kyle Jackson.
Wow. What an intro, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me on here.
Oh, I thank you for being here. It's going to be interesting with 2001, especially considering that that was right after the millennium and all everything. And I don't get too many from the post-2000 years yet. So it's going to be interesting to see your take on what's going on during this time frame.
It's crazy to think how many years ago that was.
Oh, we don't talk about that here.
I know. And the funny thing is, I was talking to somebody at work the other day. He didn't know the movie AI. Yep, with Steven Spielberg's and Haley Joel Osment. He didn't even know who Haley was. I'm like, oh my God, am I that old? Oh, Lord.
AI is one of those films that I absolutely like up until a point. That's as soon as he finds the blue angel or the statue.
Yeah, I think so.
Underwater, I'm like, perfect ending. That movie could end right there. And then it goes on for another 20 minutes. I'm like, oh, you ruined it.
Cough, unnecessary. I agree with you.
Before we begin into the movies of the year, what was life like? It's 14 years old for you.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I was one of the youngest in my class. I will say that much, because I kind of skipped sixth grade, so to speak. So I was in eighth grade, getting ready to graduate middle school, and then graduated. And then I was living in Boca Raton during that time. And then we actually moved back to Baltimore for me to start high school that year. So,
yeah, so the Baltimore Ravens win actually might have even more relevance.
Yep. Yep. Been an OG since 1996, man.
I actually love Baltimore. I've been there once and I love that city.
That will always be home for me. Doesn't matter how long I've been in Florida or how much I love it here, it's home, no matter what.
Okay, so perfect. We now have the stage set for 2001 as a 14-year-old skipping grades.
I never did that, believe it or not. I never played hooky. I'm proud to say that. No.
The only time I ever played hooky was on my senior skip day. And we actually had an event where we went out and planted trees on our senior skip day. So that's the only time I ever skipped school.
Okay, right on.
I guess we were two goody two shoes.
Yeah. I'll fess up to that one. Sure, why not?
So in 2001, we have a couple of really big movies leading the pack in regards to money and how they did for the year.
Oh my God, yeah.
What were one of your favorites of the year? Was it one of the top two here?
Definitely, man. I mean, I'm looking at the list. Yep, I saw quite a few of these in theaters, actually. Yep. Saw Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. I saw Shrek, Monsters, Inc., Ocean 11, Beautiful Mind. Yep, Princess Diaries, Moulin Rouge, Legally Blonde, Zoolander. I saw a lot of those movies in theaters.
You actually saw the Princess Diaries in the theater?
Yep, I did. A couple of friends from my middle school all wanted to go, and I was like, all right, fine, I'll go. But I love it. And you know what? I hadn't seen Julie I think, in a movie since The Sound of Music that I recalled. So knew plenty about her, but it was nice to see her make her, I guess, return to mainstream.
The one that blew my mind on your list here at 14, watching A Beautiful Mind in the theater, that movie, even as an adult, is kind of like, what? I read the book, the autobiography or the book on him, but I don't think I would have seen that in the theater at the time.
Yeah, my parents were into a lot of those dramatic movies. And the thing that usually does get me interested is if it's a true story. You can name ones like in the recent years, The Green Book, that was a great movie. And, you know, Walk the Line, I know, was a few years after 2001. So those based on a true story ones, I always find them kind of appealing. I'm not going to lie.
Makes sense then. So you covered the number one of the year, though, with Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. We get the break into J.K. Rowling, J.K. Rowling world, and get to see, you know, Daniel Radcliffe as a little tiny guy.
Yep.
And of course, now they've released this last week, as a matter of fact, the picture of the new Harry Potter for the HBO TV series, as well as Nick Frost as Hagrid.
I'm not too thrilled about this new one. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it's a little harder to actually like the universe, knowing how off the rails J.K. Rowling has gone in regards to things. You know, it's like, oh, J.K., why?
Keep your mouth shut. I know.
Exactly. Yeah. But Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, though, was massive. I mean, people were already doing, you know, lining up to get the books at midnight openings and things like that. So seeing on the big screen was a crazy thing. How about you?
Yep. I think I didn't see it the first night, but I think it was that weekend. I managed to get tickets either Saturday or Sunday. So.
And what did you think at the time?
It was incredible. I mean, they had only released, I think, what was the recent book? I think Goblet of Fire was I had read all the way through books 1 through 4. And because when they announced that the movies were coming out, I figured, okay, I better read these books just so that way I don't look like the dumbest one in the room. So I had been gifted them at some points in life, and just to see it play out on the big screen was like one of the coolest things ever, man. I mean, it was like, and they're all star cast. I mean, a lot of legendary English actors, whether it's, you know, Maggie Smith, newer from Sister Act, Robbie Coltrane from, I don't remember if American Legends, which was a Disney project, was a year or two after, but I had heard a lot of these people's names before. So that also attracted me to it. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, like you said, the cast alone was just massive, you know, and of course, now we're losing professors left and right. Yeah, both Dumbledores, you lost Snape, lost McGonagall, lost Hagrid.
We lost Uncle Vernon, we lost a lot of those guys,
But I think I agree with you, that was, it was seeing it on the big screen, hearing the John Williams soundtrack coming in as you watch the film is just, you know, crazy. It was like, oh my gosh, you know, this is actually a pretty good translation of book to screen.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, Monsters, Inc. did a little parody of it where, I don't know if you saw that or not, where they're like playing, Mike and Sully are playing charades, I think it was. And then Sully's like pointing to his hair and holding a pot of flowers trying as like a movie intro or something. And of course, Mike doesn't get it, so...
No, I didn't hear that. I didn't see that one. I don't know how I missed that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, because Monsters, Inc. was a huge movie that summer, Pixar, I remember. So
Pixar was at the top of its game back then. Monsters, Inc. And we already had Toy Story 1. I think Toy Story 2 even by this point in time.
Yep, you know? Toy Story 2 was 99, I believe.
And so they were that's back when Pixar was actually good.
Yes, I agree. 100%.
And I think at this point in time, Monsters, Inc. was probably my favorite Pixar film. Was The Incredibles before or after? I think it was after.
Let's see. Hold on. Okay, Toy Story was 95. Bug's Life was 97. Toy Story 2 is 99. Monsters was 1. I don't think... I think The Incredibles was 2004.
Okay. So yeah, a couple more years. I thought it was after, I was pretty sure.
Yeah, I don't remember if anything came out in 2002, but I know that Finding Nemo was 2003. I know that.
They can't all be winners because The Bug's Life, it was okay. But yeah, it was still a good time for Pixar this time.
I agree. Yeah. Now between, and they've produced a lot of really great franchises.
Oh, yeah. Now, between Shrek and Monsters, Inc., we had two green monsters.
Yes. Yes, we did.
Now, what was your opinion on Shrek? Because when I first heard about Shrek, you know, when I first heard there was a movie coming out called Shrek, I was like, what the hell is a Shrek? What's Shrek? What does that mean?
I mean, the thing, like I said, that appeals me to most of the movies is definitely the cast. And, you know, Eddie Murphy, Cameron Diaz, can't go wrong with them. Didn't, believe it or not, didn't really know much about Mike Myers, because I wasn't allowed to watch the Austin Powers movies.
Okay.
Because, yeah, those were all PG-13, and by that time, yeah, we had Goldmember the next year, 2002, saw that. Again, animation and all of that, I didn't even know anything about DreamWorks, but yeah, that movie was a laugh a minute. I loved it.
Oh, yeah, and actually, if you're talking about DreamWorks, I mean, Shrek practically built that studio, if you think about it.
And Jeffrey Katzenberg, yep.
Well, I don't mean by real people. I mean by success of the film. And Shrek was one of the first movies. And how many have there been now? There's like five, I think, Shreks and two Puss in Boots.
Four Shreks, two Puss in Boots. And I think the fifth one is coming out next year. Okay. I think Eddie or one of the core four said they'll be seeing another Shrek in December of next year.
Maybe that's why I think five. But we've had a lot of success just off that Shrek.
And they love Puss in Boots, and they love the Trolls, too. So
I actually enjoy the Trolls movies, but that's getting way too far in the future.
Yeah, I know, right?
You missed one of the big ones. And I'm wondering, as a 14-year-old, because when I was young, when I was a teenager, I was big into reading fantasy books and things. So I had read The Hobbit, and I had read the Lord of the Rings books. But The Fellowship of the Ring, one of the biggest releases like of the year, for sure. Were you not a Tolkien fan, or did you see it when you were 14?
No, sir, I did not. I was not into – truth be told, I am not much of a reader. I really am not. And the only reason I read the Harry Potter books was because they – so many people who I went to school with were like talking and talking about it. And, you know, they were so hooked on them and wrapped into it. And I finally was like, fine, I'm tired of being the most ignorant person in the group. I'll do it. But no, but yeah, Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit books were not really topics of discussion for me and the people that I hung out with. So.
Understood. Yeah. Well, one of the things you bring up with Harry Potter, too, about the fact that you were kind of peer pressured into reading it, is that the Harry Potter book franchise kind of sort of gave a little bit of a heartbeat back to young adult books and young adult reading, because, you know, this franchise idea. I mean, I was a nerd and a geek and things. So that was one of the reasons I read. But Harry Potter kind of brought other people that normally wouldn't read into that loop. And so the books were obsessions with many of the kids. I mean, they'd stay up and go to the midnight releases of books and go to the Harry Potter parties and all that kind of thing.
I always wanted to go to one of those, but again, you're only 13, you don't have a car and all that kind of stuff, so wasn't really in the cards for me, unfortunately. But okay. I did actually see the midnight premiere of Goblet of Fire. That was in my college years, so finally get to one, I will say.
And that was my favorite of the books, I think, was Goblet of Fire.
Oh, me too. That was incredible. And I mean, I remember we all went into it thinking, how are they going to make Lord Voldemort look? Because it's like, and the fact that they chose probably the most eligible bachelor / good looking guy of English actors to play him. It's like, what? You're kidding me.
Yeah, little nose surgery, a little snip snip, you know, and he got the part.
Oh, he nailed it. No question.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with it in the TV series.
I know. I'm definitely curious. I'm not going to lie.
So let's see. Monsters, Inc. We talked briefly about. That's one of my top Pixar films of all time.
Yep. Likewise.
Pearl Harbor. As a historian, I cringed. I've only watched the movie once, but I cringed at how bad it was in regards to the first whatever 20 minutes when they're fighting. Okay, there's some good scenes there, but then after that, it's like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah, I think I watched that in college. I think one of my film classes had it for a view. So
you didn't watch Hannibal as a 14-year-old?
No, I didn't.
Let's see. Black Hawk Down is one of my faves. I like reading the book than watching the film. Probably not a 14-year-old film.
No, neither was Training Day. So
yeah. Moulin Rouge was one of my top 10 films of all time. That came out that year.
Yep. I'm actually surprised, but I think this movie might have been 2002. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? I was into the Moulin Rouge because of the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what happened for me, because for my wife, for her birthday, I just bought her the soundtrack blind. I had not seen the movie. But we knew we liked Baz Luhrmann.
He's epic, yeah.
Yeah, from Strictly Ballroom. And so blind bought the soundtrack, then immediately got the DVD shortly thereafter.
Yeah, ooh. Baz Luhrmann's a genius. I love, he's done a lot of great ones, whether it's Romeo and Juliet or The Great Gatsby. Mm-hmm. He's great.
Yeah, I love Baz.
Have you seen the musical, the Moulin Rouge musical yet?
No, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't know if it's come to Florida, or I'm sure it has maybe at some point or another, but... Yeah, I mean, Aaron Tveit won, his first Tony for that, or for...
One of the things there that came out that year, which we probably would not have seen in the United States, but mm-hmm. Miyazaki released Spirited Away that year.
Yes, I remember that one, actually. Yeah, I think I only knew about that because I'm not sure if it did. Did that win Best Animated Feature?
I don't think so. Not at least in 2001, because I don't think it came to the United States in 2001 quite yet.
Okay, yeah, because I believe it or not, I think Shrek won the first ever Best Animated Feature Oscar. I think that's when they came out with that award. And then I think Spirited Away did it in 2002 at those Oscars.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember feeling a bit bitter that it beat Monsters, because I think Monsters was up for it but didn't win.
Yeah, Monsters is the superior film in my humble opinion.
Shrek, I don't disagree with you, buddy.
Yeah, Shrek is fun, but Monsters had more heart, I think.
Oh, I agree. They both had excellent voice casts, and they both were great in their own doses. So,
well, and you gotta love the relationship between Sully and Boo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I know a little bit personally about that, because again, that's my Disney past.
You have a monster in your closet?
Oh, I was good friends with Sully for many, many years. So.
Yeah. How, can you elaborate?
Well, my NDA is up. So yes, I was Sully at Disney MGM Studio. Well, MGM now Hollywood Studios for many, many years, man.
Oh, that's awesome. I did not know that.
Yeah, my whole right arm is full of Disney characters and little trinkets from my 13 years of employment. So, nice. Yep.
My right arm is Pumbaa. My left arm is Pooh.
That's cute.
Excellent. Excellent. How was it playing a character in Disney?
Oh, my God. I wanted to do that since I was 5 years old, believe it or not. I remember my first Disney trip. There's obviously the initial, holy crap, you're a lot taller than you look on TV, and you don't talk. So yeah. That was my initial impression, but kids were, bringing autograph books and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, okay, I'll get the hang of this. And I warmed up to them. Yeah. So.
Have you ever listened to, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, the podcast?
Here and there, yeah, I have.
Reason I ask is because Matt Gourley, who's one of his people that he works with there, went off and did his own podcast about being a character, being a Disney cast member. That was interesting. Hopefully he has another season coming out, but he talks with people that were cast members. It was pretty interesting.
Wow, that's cool. I'm definitely going to have to look into that.
I'll post it when I post links to things from this podcast.
Sounds good.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's only been one season, but I'm looking forward to another one.
Yep, yeah. There's always hope, right?
Okay, so any other films that came out in 2001 that really drove you, that made you excited to go to the theaters?
Definitely those were like the top ones that we did talk about. I mean, and oh wow, I just realized, yeah, Fast and the Furious was born that year.
Man, Fast and the Furious, what are we on, 11 now? We're coming up on 11?
I don't know. I think so, yeah. I think F11 is the next one.
I always like the joke, you know, the fact that the first movie was about like stealing radios or TVs or something like that. And now there's like nuclear submarines and rocket ships to space
and everything. And all the stories within the stories. Exactly.
Yep. And the relationship between The Rock and Jason Statham. No, not Jason Statham. Who is it that he had a conflict with?
Well, I mean, he had conflicts with Totoro, Vin Diesel, and with Shaw, which is, I think, Statham's character. So
I can't believe that show's gone the direction it's gone, but they're still fun to watch, as brainless as they are.
Well, and they have, you know, their attractions at USO and Hollywood, so.
Yeah, I went to Omar, actually, of all people. Omar and Ann tricked me into going onto the Fast and the Furious ride at Universal.
Oh, really?
And they're like, this is one of the best rides here. You got to go on it. And I'm like, okay, cool. So we go in, and the lobby, the walkthrough in the lobby is kind of cool. But then the ride, oh, my God. I'm sure you've been on it, or you probably know about it.
Yeah.
It's painful. It's like dialed in, and it's just, oh, my God. It's like the worst ride ever.
And to think they took Beetlejuice's graveyard away for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm still a little bit bitter about that. I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed that show.
Yeah. I am going to go to Epic Universe here in December when I go to the Over the Edge this year.
All right. Yeah, so. I don't know. Family and I are trying to go, but oh my gosh, it's insane with the crowds. And I know that not everything is 100% yet, so.
Yeah, I went to
Volcano Bay.
No, Hollywood Studios last year, but nobody ended up going with me, so I was by myself, which actually worked out really well because I went in the single rider lines over there, so I got on every ride. And so I'm hoping that the universe has a single rider line or something similar, because I want to hop on everything.
Yeah, I will say there's nothing wrong whatsoever with the single rider and doing it solo. I mean, when I was running my half marathons in Disneyland for the many years I did, poor Alyssa couldn't get the time off of work. And so I took full advantage of every single rider opportunity I could. So,
yeah, I went on the two big Star Wars rides. I went on, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I got off, went right back on, you know, and it was like 15 minutes total. Meanwhile, everybody else is in the line for an hour and a half.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. And that's never slowing down. Yeah, that Star Wars land is, that line ain't ever going down, I don't think.
Well, I think Rise of the Resistance, I have a hard, I mean, we're going off on a tangent here, but that's okay. Rise of the Resistance is one of the best rides for sure. I don't know if I like it more or equally to the Avatar Flight of Pandora. Both of those are just amazing rides.
I agree. Yeah, the Flight of Passage is incredible.
Yeah, oh, Flight of Passage, that's right. We went off on a tangent there, perfectly good, because
being that's Disney, all right.
Disney fans is perfectly good, too. I think for movies, we covered did a good job covering the films. About TV shows, because there's one TV show that was one of the best TV shows of the year, and we have mutual friends from this particular show.
Yep. Survivor, man. You know it.
The Australian Outback. You know?
I know. Yep.
It was... I've talked with Lex Vanderberg from Survivor on this before. And one of the rough things about this is it came out, I mean, in the year 2001, there was a fairly major event that happened in September, you know, and it kind of impacted Survivor a little bit, to the point to where they thought they would not be able to be aired because the country was in mourning at the time, kind of thing.
Yep.
But they ended up airing it. And Survivor Australian Outback, personally to me, is one of my absolute top seasons, not only because it was an amazing season, but also because I've befriended many of these cast members or contestants, you know,
likewise
from the show. Yeah. give me a little background on your experience with Outback before I dig deeper into mine.
Okay. So I'll just say, again, you know, it was a topic of discussion a little bit amongst people I was in school with. I did not watch Borneo. I mean, everybody was talking about it and stuff. And believe it or not, another show on here that was at its prime, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I was a game show guy. I will say that much. So I loved Who Wants to Be a Millionaire a lot. And, you know, Regis Philbin and let's play. I would do that all the time. And we'd play it in school and all that stuff. But the Ravens won, you know, Super Bowl 35, January 28th, 2001. And I was like, on such a friggin' high. I was like jumping around, so excited, because I still have yet to see the Baltimore Orioles win the World Series. I wasn't even born yet the last time they won.
Well, so, I will go off on a slight tangent on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire while we're talking about it, so I don't want to go too deep into it yet. But
no, okay.
You're right. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was at its peak and people were loving it. And actually, I used it in my wedding. Yeah. So for our wedding, you know, I got married in 2001. And so for our wedding, I had already communicated with our minister and with my father-in-law, you know, my future father-in-law, not quite yet at the time. And so what it was with the minister, I told her, I'm going to do a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire thing. When you get to the questions, does anybody have anything that, you know, to not have these two get married, whatever. And so first up, I said, well, I'd like to call a friend. And so I had my cell phone in my pocket and I called her dad in the audience and said, and said, do you mind if I marry, may I please marry your daughter? You know? So, but the funny thing was he was in the audience and his cell phone started ringing. And I don't know if he was flustered or not, but it took him a minute to answer. So I talked to him, and then the minister goes, okay, so if does anybody else have anything to say and stuff? And I said, well, I said, can I ask the audience? You know? And then I said, should I marry Lisa and everything? And everybody's cheering and stuff.
That's adorable, man. That's really cool.
So tied it all in Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So that kind of shows you how popular that show was at the time.
Oh, 100%. And I don't mean to go too off on a tangent. Also, I'm not sure yet. I think that this opened in 2002. It might have been one. I'm not sure. But the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire Play It attraction at MGM Studios.
Oh, yeah.
I actually got in the hot seat a few times, believe it or not. And it's funny. Everybody always would ask, because I mean, it closed by the time I started working there. And I, you know, told a few people about how I did. And they're like, how in the world did you manage that? And I always would say, I played Mario Party a lot. And so I would practice the games where you had to hit the buttons really, really, really fast. It's obviously you have to know trivia or you have to know stuff, so to speak. And so if I ever knew that I was going to Disney to visit, I just, on my off time when I wasn't doing homework and all that stuff, I was playing that game. I was playing the first three Mario Party games on the N64 and doing whatever ones made you hit the buttons fast. So it paid off, obviously.
Yeah. Did you ever win any money?
Well, they didn't give out money. It was the pre-show. It's pins, points, and prizes. So, if they're all pins with, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire Planet on it, and then the point value on the bottom. I got up to 32,000 once.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah, and at the plateaus, if you reached 1,000, you get a baseball cap that said, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and then the 1,000 thing. 32,000 was a polo shirt with the logo on it, and then the million point prize was, at first, a trip to New York and a seat in the audience to watch a millionaire taping. And then they changed it to a Disney cruise.
Oh, I would have been working my butt off for that.
Oh, I tried, man. I tried. And I remember my first trip, it was my second time in the hot seat, because they go over the rules with you. And the funny thing is, the phone a friend was actually phone a complete stranger. They just had a phone built into the wall at the old Mickey Avenue, and cast member would pick it up and hand it to a random person. Hopefully they could help you.
That's hilarious.
And I remember, again, that second time, they'd always be like, do you have any questions? And I was like, yes, where's the camera? I've always wanted to do this. And I did, let's play. So awesome. I checked something off my bucket list in those times. It was incredible.
Side note here, I realized that I mixed up Survivor Australian Outback and Survivor Africa. Sometimes when I get talking about Survivor, especially when they come out in the same year, I got a little confused. So just a little side note caveat, I'm adding on to the podcast. Perfect. So let's jump back to Survivor real quick here, because I know that this is something near and dear to both our hearts.
Absolutely.
Survivor back then was still people from all walks of life. I mean, you had all kinds of people together. The Borneo had shown
that
you got every kind of person in Africa. I mean, all the old school seasons were still about normal people, people that weren't supermodels or that kind of thing. And so,
every man, yes.
The first person voted out of this season is one of my close friends, you know, Diane Ogden.
Yes. I love her.
she had her kerfuffle over the, I think they said, was it peaches or
beans?
It was beans. They said on the show beans, but she told me it was actually peaches.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cause the way they showed it on the show was, I think it was Clarence who opened it, didn't, you know, discuss it with his tribe. And then they never let him live that down. I felt so bad for him.
Yeah. Give me some of your experience again, cause I don't want to jump in with my stories, cause I've got a couple of them. Tell me about your experience watching this, especially since you hadn't seen Borneo, because Borneo, to me, last episode of the season finale of Borneo, legitimately, and this is no exaggeration, had goosebumps during the final tribal.
Yeah, how could it not? Especially with whether it's rats and snakes or just being like, how in the hell did Richard Hatch pull that off? So.
Exactly.
So, but nothing against Rich. I love the guy. He used to, again, come to... He was one of the first ones at the sidewalk sale, and I will say, he is nothing like what he is on TV.
Yeah.
Yep, he's sapping a sweetheart, great guy. When a camera's on him, he knows what to do. Let's just put it that way.
Well, that's what reality TV is all about.
Exactly. It's like, if you know what they want and you give it to them, you're gold. And that's exactly what Richard Hatch knows how to do. So Ravens win. I'm obviously so hyped. I don't know what time it is, and I'm literally like, I can't go to bed. And so, you know, they were like, of course, you know, I stayed tuned for MVP trophy and, you know, post game stuff. And then it went right into that. And I'm literally like, okay, wow, this is actually pretty cool. It is literally survival. I think I was just fixated on that. And it was just that aspect. And then, you know, it's like, I'm sure that people will probably talk about it at school tomorrow, so now I'll be somewhat in the know. And so, but then that's the thing with, you know, Survivor, and I'll admit with other shows, once you start watching it, you get invested, and then, you know, you're hooked, and then, you know, you really are rooting for, I will say, I was rooting hardcore for Colby that year. Yeah. I love Colby, and I was rooting for Elizabeth too, so...
Interesting. Yeah. No, I got you. This is one of the things about reality in general. You obviously, they're edited for, you know, the time and edited
correct
for, you know, to make sure you get your character the way that you want them and stuff, good or bad. But yeah,
exactly.
I was all about Lex and Big Tom, you know, Lex and Big Tom and T-Bird. You know, I loved all three of those, you know. Absolutely.
Oh yeah. Yep. I love, yep, you can't not love, and the trio of Ethan, Tom, and Lex was incredible.
Yeah.
In Africa. So
yep, I was not upset with the winner of that season.
Yeah. I admit I wasn't upset with the winner of Australia either. I thought for sure maybe he had it. But Tina, God bless her. I love her to death. She's a sweet woman. She's still exactly the same person she was on the show.
Yep. I played ping pong with her at the event.
Okay.
She whooped me.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep, she whooped my butt.
Oops.
my big thing, Lex was one of the very first survivors I talked with on a Zoom, like back when, you know, they're one of the very first people I ever talked to in Survivor. Billy was the first one, Billy Garcia. First, but Lex, him. I think, was the second. And Lex and I just talked and talked and talked and talked, you know, and now we call each other brothers from another mother.
That's cool, man. That's awesome. Yeah.
But I asked him in the thing, I said, So were the Lions really a threat, or did they just play that up in the edit to make sure that it was, you know, something that, you know, they made us think that you were in danger? He goes, oh, no, no. He goes, those Lions were a threat. He says, Mark Burnett came out to the camp and actually, you know, he never comes out to the camp ever and stuff. He
Bryant.
Came out to the camp and said, you need to build this, this protection up higher. He goes, I could care less if any of you guys die. He goes, you guys signed a release and all that stuff, but my cameramen are at danger because your fire is not big enough and your, I can't remember if they call it BOLA, whatever.
BOLAs, yes.
Yeah. Your BOLA is not high enough and, not, you know, and these lions are right there, you know. they were super loud at night when they roared and things. You'd be right next to you practically.
Wow.
Because they had snipers with them when they walked to and from challenges to make sure that, you know, they had protection.
Doc Carl from that same season's told me a few similar stories. So
Doc and I hang out when I'm at the event, and he brought me cannoli. He and his wife from home bring me some cannoli from the freezer.
Nice.
Yeah, but it's funny though, like, you know, like I never in my life would have thought, oh, I'm gonna connect with these people and actually not see them as celebs as much anymore. Well, not as much, not see them as celebs, but see them as friends. It's like, oh, wow.
And you know what? You literally hit the nail right on the head. I literally remember going to the first sidewalk sale, now called Over the Edge. I literally remember going to that and just being excited to meet these people I had seen on, you know, TV for years. And then, you know, to actually connect with them as people, I feel exactly the same way about a lot of them. I don't look at them as reality stars or any of that. I look at them as friends, and it's incredible.
Yep, exactly. When I go to the events and I hang out with them and we just chill, you know, we sit back, we chat. We don't even talk about the show not as much anymore. We just kind of relax, you know, that kind of thing.
Exactly. So, yeah,
it's pretty darn cool.
It's like one of the coolest things that was literally handed to me on a silver platter. So
for those unfamiliar with it, I'm going to do a shameless plug here. Over the Edge Celebrity Weekend. It's in Orlando, or actually it's in near Orlando in Celebration, Florida, at a hotel called the Malia. It's December 4th through 7th. And one of my friends, two of my friends actually build this, and it's just reality show contestants all over the place, as well as wrestlers. So you get everybody from Big Brother, Survivor, Amazing Race, Naked and Afraid, The Challenge. I mean, all these different shows. And you get to go hang out with them, basically. You get to go have a good time, get autographs, and just, you know what I'm saying, you get to know these people as good people and things like that. That's what it is. I hang out with a bunch of these, you know, folks, or I talk with them just generally on the phone or whatever and things. And so these are really down-to-earth, super nice people in many cases. Like, for example, Sandra, who's a two-time winner of Survivor and was on the Traitors and Australian Survivor and everything, she's great. She's an amazing person. She's super fan friendly, and she's just so nice. But anyhow, this happens December 4th through 7th of this year, and you can buy tickets online at Over the Edge. Just look up Over the Edge Celebrity Weekend, and you can find them. So, shameless plug. I'm going to be there. So if I'm going to be there, you should be there.
I concur. I approve this message.
This message has been approved.
This PSA has been approved.
Went off on a tangent there, but this is the first time I've had a chance to talk about Survivor on podcast. So the only other person I talked with past 2000 was not a reality show person. So
that's okay.
Okay. Other shows that came out this year, anything that jumps out at you?
Yeah. Other than Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? That was pretty much, again, I'm a game show guy. Been trying out for Jeopardy and Wheel and all of that since I could. No luck yet, but, you know, I ain't giving up. So.
If you know Clark got on Trivial Pursuit. And I think Trivial Pursuit's actually casting right, and they were a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. And LeVar Burton hosts that.
Yep. I'll see if I can't find that information for you. Some of the stuff my wife and I watched at this point in time, Smallville, was a big one for us. Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah. A lot of people I know loved Buffy, and I think as Friends on there. Yep. I have one of my Disney peeps. Oh, she loves that show, and she loves Jennifer Aniston. So
I could never stomach Friends. I watched like two or three episodes ever, and I'm like, nope.
I will say though, with looking at this list in the break rooms at Disney, this was before the day of Netflix and all of that, but we would have certain channels on and we'd always catch Raymond reruns and Friends reruns quite a bit. Yeah. So
we, when you kind of scoffed a little at Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but Buffy was one of these shows, which I'm like, that's ridiculous. They have a show for that. That can't be like, that could never hold up. And then I watched an episode and I'm like, okay. And then I watched another episode. I'm like, okay. And then I watched another. I'm like, I'm hooked. That was early Joss Whedon. And then Scrubs came out in 2001.
Yep. I'm looking at the list. Yep. Oh, that 70s show. Yep. I remember that one too. So
24. Well, there's like four seasons of 24. It's like, how many bad days can this guy have?
Yeah, exactly.
Sopranos was out in 2001.
Yep. Yeah, we didn't have HBO back then, and I'm sure my parents would have figured out a way to block it.
Yeah. Sopranos for a 14-year-old, probably not so good.
No. Trying to remember when DirecTV became a thing. I want to say it might have already been. I'm not sure.
Let's see. Based on these shows, I would say probably either near here or around here, because I remember, I think I DVR'd or Buffy, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think by the time I was in Baltimore, it became, or DirecTV became the way that we would receive our channels. So
interesting to think pop culture wise how that's actually changed, though, because I've talked with people from, you know, 1978, and I'm talking, you know, now with 2001, and the mindset of how television changed drastically over those years, and how the viewing habits of people changed, and how they're completely different nowadays.
Yep. I mean, you used to have to go on, I think it was channel 19 for me, it's for the TV guide, and it would literally go so slow, and it's like, come on, just get to the channel, tell me what's on, please.
Yep, hit the page down. Oh,
yeah, you couldn't do anything about that. It was like, come on, just tell me what's there beyond, please.
Smallville was one of the ones we absolutely watched. You know, and reason is that the first couple seasons were, yes, they're Monster of the Week, but Smallville had one of the best soundtracks for a television show. I still have a playlist on Spotify of Smallville songs.
Oh, nice. And I know a lot of people from that show appear at conventions frequently, so.
I was, when I went to Utah to see Omar at the convention out there, I went to his hotel to get him, I think, for some reason, I can't remember what, or to have breakfast with him. And so I was in the elevator with Tom Welling and things, and like, oh.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Okay, so television-wise, I think we pretty much covered it. You were a game show guy, and Survivor was the ultimate game show, practically. Yeah.
Yep. Again, the reality, again, it is, I do say all the time, you hit the nail on it. It is a reality TV show, but it's an edited television show. I think that's what a lot of people tend to forget.
Well, I think I made that mistake before. Kelly Shin. You know, Kelly Shin was on Survivor. She's
Nicaragua.
She's an amazing person.
I love her. Yeah,
she's wonderful. And when I, you know, before I met her, I was one of these judgy armchair quarterback people, because she ended up quitting her season, you know? So I'm like, why, how could anybody quit the season? I mean, this is the once in a lifetime. And how many people, were not on the show that could have been on the show, all that kind of, you know, all that kind of judgy stuff. Then I met her, and I met her face to face, and we talked about things and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not judging anybody like that anymore, ever. Cause an edit is an edit, and it's made to make people look good or bad and stuff. And, you know, she had her reasons. I'm not one to be able to judge, because A, I didn't experience what she did, and B, you know, the edit can make it look worse than it really is.
I 100% agree with you on that. And I will say, from Australian Outback, Jerry Manthe, man, I love her to death. She's one of the greatest, best people I know. And again, that edit in Outback and All Stars, oh man, that edit was a killer. I felt so bad. And the fact she got booed off the stage, I think that was at All Stars. It's like, man, give her a break, please.
Yeah. And Deb Eaton. I mean, Deb Eaton went to big depression over, you know, that.
Yep. Sort of
stories coming out and all that.
I forgot about Deb. Yeah, you're right. I forgot about her.
Yep. I think we did a good job covering TV shows.
Yep.
How about moving on to music? What kind of music were you listening to in 2001?
Well, I mean, we didn't have iPods yet, so I can't remember. I think it was 102.7, which was kind of, I guess, it was one of those radio stations that was my frequent go-to that was like the hits of today, but also the past.
Okay.
And that's how I usually found out about a lot of the new stuff. And it's crazy looking at all of these popular ones. Like, man, I don't even know where to start. Like, Hanging by a Moment, Lifehouse, Love Don't Cost a Thing, Drops of Jupiter. And I remember, yeah, and the Train thing is insane. I think people forget Train was even around. Hibernated for a few years and then came back with Hey Soul Sister like 10 years after.
It's funny for me looking at this list because this is after my, you know, normally I always have comments on what the music is or whatever because I can connect on much of it. In this case, really for me, only Dido, you know, with Thank You, mm-hmm. and Lenny Kravitz with Again, really those are probably, well, actually maybe Jennifer Lopez, Love Don't Cost a Thing, mainly because I had crushed on Jennifer Lopez back then.
Me too, I will say. I think I got the wedding planner for Christmas the following year.
Okay.
So, yep.
So yep.
And I will say they showed Selena in my Spanish classes those years. So, yep.
Yeah, I don't have too many I connect with from this period of time. 90s had some good stuff, and I'm looking at 2001 right now. And I'm like, nope.
Like, yeah, I agree. And I can't believe Drops of Jupiter was that year because I hear that on the radio all the time, even today. Oh, and Lady Marmalade. Yeah, everybody knew that one because of Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, that's one I would know because of the movie, basically.
And not to mention where I was going to middle school, they all did like, it's funny, they had two dance numbers for like their big talent show. One of them was Lady Marmalade and the other one was actually Love Don't Cost a Thing. Those were the two ones that jumped out at me first. That's the reason why. So
it's kind of weird to think of the craziness with Jennifer Lopez past this time frame, because at this time frame, I think she might have still been single and she was at the top of the charts. She was amazing and all that kind of stuff. And then it was marriage, a different marriage, and then another marriage, and then back to Ben Affleck and another, you know, and things.
Yeah, and poor Ben Affleck. You know, I gave that whole thing so much flack over the years. I just remember after his breakup with Lopez, I was like, Jen, really, man? Didn't work out with Lopez. How's it going to work with Garner? So
yeah, he just likes Jennifer's.
Apparently. And I remember the Bennifer hype all those years, whether it was Geely or Jersey Girl or, I mean, I think those were 2003, 2004 movies, but
yeah,
Geely. I remember the hype. Gosh. Oh God, worst movie of all time. I know.
People badmouth Jersey Girl, but actually I like Kevin Smith as a director, so I give it more credit probably than it should get, but it was okay.
Yeah, I actually really liked Jersey Girl. I feel like it was very different from what we know Kevin Smith mm-hmm. to do and be. And first one that actually did not have Jason Mewes in it. So, yeah, because Jason was doing hard drugs and Kevin said that was his tough love.
They're actually coming out here in a couple of weeks to the Comic-Con here in Colorado Springs.
You know, oh, okay.
Kevin Smith, Jason Mewes, Jason Lee.
Jason Lee, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, pretty much everybody practically.
That's so cool. I'm surprised Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back didn't make the movie list, but that might have been 2002, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, I don't think Jay and Silent Bob would have been a top 20 performer. As much as I would like to think so, because I really was a huge Kevin Smith. I mean, I still like Kevin Smith movies, don't get me wrong. But you know, he's more about the podcasting nowadays.
Like a lot of those actors are. I think they enjoy that stuff a little bit more than acting now. And in particular, David Spade and Dana Carvey.
Yeah, with Fly on the Wall.
Yep.
I almost listened to that this week, as a matter of fact. I didn't get around to it yet. But
one other thing I want to touch on. Even though, again, this is, I can't believe they celebrated 50 years, Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
They lost Will Ferrell in 2001. I remember that was when he taped his last episode.
Who else was on it then? That would have been the end of that generation of actors.
I know Jimmy Fallon was still on there.
Okay.
Jimmy Fallon, Daryl Hammond was there. trying to think. I think Tim Meadows, either he was on there or he had maybe already left. A lot of the Mean Girls people, I think, were either on it or they were going to be on it. So
Tina Fey, Amy Poehler,
Tim Meadows, all those Sherry people.
Sherry O'Terry, was she still on there? I think she might have still been on there.
Maybe. I'm not sure. But I do remember, again, Will's last episode when he concluded with Celebrity Jeopardy and the real Alex Trebek came stage.
I don't know if I ever saw that one. Off.
Oh, yeah. It was the musical edition. It was Jimmy Fallon as Bjork, or Jimmy Fallon as Dave Matthews. Winona Ryder, she was the host for the night as Bjork, and obviously Hammond as Connery.
Yeah, that's always the best. Connery and Burt Reynolds, you know, Norm Macdonald as Burt Reynolds. Those two are the best that made that whole sketch worth it.
Hey, it's not his name.
Yeah. I can't repeat my favorite category. It was therapists, you know, but Sean Connery says it.
What? How about an anal bum cover, Trebek? I spent the last 5 years of my life trying to invent an anal bum cover. I lived for those SNL skits, man. Anytime when Will was on there, and again, that was the last one of him, and I was so mad to see him leave.
Yeah, well, he went off to great success overall.
Yeah, that's true. 2003, he had Elf, he had Old School, he had and Zoolander, I forgot, yep. That was one of the movies in 2001. Yep, he was in that too. So,
I think we covered music. You know, we both kind of didn't really have as many big hits, though, that year.
Not really.
You sound like you're at least a partial video gamer when you talked about Super Smash Bros.
Yes. And oh, my God.
Mario Party.
Yeah. Oh,
you didn't say you like Super Smash Bros. You said you like Mario Party. My bad.
Well, I will say I luckily had turned 13, and I think – don't quote me on this. I'm not 100% sure. I think the original one on the N64 might have been one of the only animated games to get a T rating.
Oh, really? That's hilarious.
Maybe I know, right?
Fighting each other over it.
Yep. And my parents wouldn't even let me play Mortal Kombat growing up. So
yeah, well, I can understand that at 14 at least.
But by then, you know, I was of age. And again, I remember when the GameCube came out, I was one of the first ones. I got that, and I was so excited to have it.
Oh, yeah. GameCube is fantastic. I loved the GameCube. I got that in 2001 as well. My big one for there was a thumb-hurting one. I loved Luigi's Mansion.
Yes! Oh, my God. That was... It. I don't know why they never gave him his own game for a long time. I mean, Wario got a game. You know, Mario had all of his. Donkey Kong had his. Why not the other brother, you know?
Well, that one, you know, with the GameCube controller, you had to suck up ghosts. But the problem is, you pretty much had to have your finger holding down hard on the you know, top right button or whatever it was
for
like a long period of time. So that game actually physically hurt.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to. You're absolutely right.
And then Super Smash Brothers Melee.
That's my favorite in the Smash Brothers franchise. I'll always love that one. Yes.
Which character would you play?
I usually, as crazy as it is, I would either choose Roy or Marth the most once I unlocked them.
Interesting. I was always a Link person.
Yep. And yeah, I will say on the original Smash Bros, when they only had, I think it was like 18 characters, I was a Pikachu person. Because I was not a Pokemon fan, but I was able to really maneuver and use his moves to my advantage. So
I have a student right now. I'm in between semesters, but I have a student who actually does competition on Smash Bros on the Switch, and he plays Pac-Man.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, really? That's cool.
He's all about Pac-Man.
Gotta love Pac-Man. Yep. They used to have those at restaurants and bars that I used to go to growing up. I always would play them. Yeah.
You were 14 going to the bars?
No. Do you remember Steak and Ale?
No.
What about Bennigan's? Did they have those? Okay. So this was all owned by the same person, but Steak and Ale's were we used to eat there all the time, and you know, they had their salad bar and then their entrees. they had a Pac-Man or a Miss Pac-Man in the bar area. And as soon as I saw it, I didn't care who was there. I could have been, no matter how old I was, I just asked, my grandpa for quarters or whatever. I'm like, let's go.
Yep. I think in the Bennigan's, same thing. The Bennigan's had one off to the side.
Well, there you go. Yep.
The sit down version.
They had those at this one too. Yeah. It wasn't the one that you find at an quote unquote arcade. So it was one that was like a table.
Now, at this period in time, I had both the GameCube and the Dreamcast. Did you have a Dreamcast?
That is one that I never got. I always wanted a Dreamcast, but I remember, I think for my birthday that year, it was either one or the other. And the same thing happened in 1996 when PlayStation was out. I can't remember the lapse in between the PlayStation and the N64, but it's like, pick one or the other. I always will pick Nintendo. I've been addicted to those games since I was 3 years old.
My problem is with the Switch and now the Switch 2 and things. I've gotten to the point now, we've got a Switch and my son plays it, but I get to the point now where even my games that I love, like Zelda and things, I just don't, I can't justify spending $300, $400 on a console to play two games.
Yeah, that's fair.
So any other games on here that were popular for you?
You brought up Luigi's Mansion. I didn't get into Pikmin until the third game, believe it or not. So just because so many people I knew in high school played it. But definitely Smash Brothers Melee, Luigi's Mansion, and oh, wow, I forgot about some of the Game Boy Advance ones. Sonic Adventure 2, yeah, it was good to see that. It was cool to see Sonic on the GameCube.
Yeah. See, I had all these consoles. I had the PS2, I had the Dreamcast, and I had the GameCube. I didn't have a Game Boy Advance at the time.
Okay. Yeah. I think I wound up with the Game Boy Advance SP when that came out. Didn't have the original one.
For Dreamcast, there is at least one game on here I want to briefly touch on was Crazy Taxi.
Yes.
I loved Crazy Taxi. And actually, as a matter of fact, I put it off for a long time, but I was working on my Raspberry Pi to make it a game emulator. And And I finally got it working last week. And one of the games that I played right off the bat was Crazy Taxi.
Nice. Yeah, I got my hands on a PS2, I think, during my college years. I think I got one at GameStop for, like, refurbished and all that stuff. And, yep, Grand Theft Auto and Crazy Taxi, yep, I was old enough to do it then, so nobody asked me questions. So
this is what I always like to ask. What was 14-year-old Kyle wearing in 2001?
Oh, boy. Other than my school uniform, I was probably just wearing my school uniform most of the time. And on weekends, probably just T-shirts from I don't know where, honestly.
Yeah,
I don't have a lot of pictures, if any, from that time in my life. So
really?
Yeah.
For 14-year-olds. Interesting. Interesting. One of the ones on the list here is velour tracksuits from 2001, which is funny because I just did my 1978 podcast, and from 1978, being 14, velour tracksuits were also in fashion. So that's 23 cool. years later,
I did do the bandana thing. Sometimes I did sometimes put it to cover my hair sometimes because I thought I was cool.
I wear my Survivor buff every once in a while.
Yep. I actually use my buff for a lot of purposes. And I remember when the pandemic hit, I used it as a mask.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Same here for the offset. Yep.
Yep. I mean, I thank me lucky stars. I was considered an essential worker, but I wasn't too big onto the thing wrapping around my ears and that part of my face, at least with the buff, I could control it.
Okay. So 2001 new commercials and advertising campaigns. There's a couple of good ones here.
What's up? What's up? Oh man, we all saw that, and yep, that's how we greeted everybody. Yep,
right. And here we are, 24 years later, and even if you don't know what it is, you know what it is.
Yeah, 100%, no doubt in my mind about that. And yeah, it's the joy of Pepsi. Yep, I think that might have been the year they were the sponsors of the halftime show.
Pepsi, yep. Yeah, Britney Spears, was she in the halftime show? Yeah, I think she was.
Yes. NSYNC, Aerosmith and were the main ones. And then Britney and Mary J. Blige were featured. Yes.
Yeah, good old. I mean, Britney Spears was at the height of her popularity at the time, too.
And she might have been dating Justin at the time. I think she was.
Yeah, I think you're right.
The funny thing is, I know you're going to think I'm crazy for this. I did not listen to NSYNC or the boy band stuff. I hardly paid it any attention until the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
So that's funny.
Maybe you were just on the you were just excited that the Ravens were winning and you're like, hey, now I like boy bands too.
Yeah, I remember watching the halftime show. I knew a bit about Aerosmith because of their ride at Disney, because Rock and Roller Coaster opened I think in 1999, so I was somewhat familiar with them.
That one just closed down too, didn't it?
No, Muppets closed down. I don't know yet what's going on with the Aerosmith, but it's going to be sad to see it rethemed. Because
for Muppet Vision 3D, actually, this last trip on the last Over the Edge, I went in there and I took as many pictures as possible.
Oh, good for you, man. Good for you.
One last run, you know?
Yep. I'm still bitter about Muppet Vision closing because that's such a staple of that park.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's still hilarious and it's still, you know, the 3D is a little worn out, but it's okay because this the whole show is so much fun.
Oh, you know? Absolutely. And I actually have a funny story with the Muppets. So I took up dancing in college because acting was getting me nowhere. And then my first tap dancing class, they actually used, I don't know how familiar you are with the pre-show for the Muppets. Yep. Mm-hmm. So that song that plays when Gonzo's doing his pot of flowers, they put that as the one to teach us to tap dance. And I'm like doing the steps and I'm trying so hard not to laugh because all I think about is you dropped your pot. And then after it's over, they're like, what are you laughing about? And so I had to explain it and none of them knew it because I'm like, oh, that's right. You all haven't been to Disney 100+ times like I have. So,
yeah, I was sad about Muppet Vision 3D. You know,
yeah, I still am.
Okay, let's see. So the Was Up, that one was heavily featured during the Super Bowl too. I mean, that was like, I think they did that commercial, like the variation of that commercial like 2 or 3 times at least during the Super Bowl.
And then Ben Stiller and Chris Rock had their little, he did like that little Zoolander-ish thing to introduce it, I remember.
The Can You Hear Me Now?
Yeah.
That one was around for a while.
Yep, I remember. And Got Milk. Oh, yeah.
Everybody doing their Got Milk with their milk mustaches.
Yep. I saw that on Sports Illustrated all the time on the magazines.
You said before the Apple iPod wasn't out, but guess it had been in October. The first iPod was released.
Oh, man. Yeah, I didn't get an iPod until 2003, I think. So
sounds about right for me, too.
It was crazy. I knew what I had listened to growing up, and I, you know, kind of put it to the side. Because moving discs in and out was a hassle. And then to finally put it all in one place, it was fun to re-listen to a lot of that stuff.
Everybody had a Walkman before this, pretty much. I mean, you know, we all had our Walkmans. And by 2001, a lot of people had the Discman. The Discman would always skip, you know, and you don't need to listen.
I know. And you make one little move and then it skips the track. And it's like, no.
So the iPod in and of itself was a game changer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll move on to food and groceries then.
Hot Pockets.
Yep, Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah, you know it. He's my favorite comedian, man. I love the guy.
My Menon campaign, but.
Yep. We need a jingle. What do you got so far, Bill? Hot Pockets. Very good, man. Very good. What are they going to say in Mexico? Caliente Pockets.
Yep.
You've got a gift, my friend. Don't lose it. Now get to work.
I'll tell you, I did eat Hot Pockets back in 2001. But, but if you try to eat them nowadays, and I just because I'm older, oh man, those things are just gut bombs.
Yep. Oh man, and Gaffigan goes off the rails in that bit talking about it. How it's like, yep. You're gonna have one for breakfast? Good morning, you're about to call in sick.
Yep,
Flash Pockets.
Yeah, we saw Gaffigan last year at our new venue.
I'm so jealous. My God. Yeah, I've been following him around since the beginning. I remember, I think Beyond the Pale was probably 2002, 2003. So
Well, even better, actually, we saw him, but we had tickets in the grass, which is way back and things. Mm-hmm. And then when we got there, they said, you guys go over here to this tent and stuff. So we went to the tent and they're like, hey, you want seats up close? I'm like,
oh, yeah,
sure. And so wow. They put us like 10 rows back. I'm like, sweet.
That's so cool.
Let's see. Yeah, but you can give the Hot Pocket comedy routine is probably one of the most classic in comedy history.
Yep. And I still, again, I work in the grocery stores and I do resets. And anytime when I have to do, it's considered a frozen snack, I always look at it and I literally quote it like it's nobody's business. I always will do pockets. I wish he'd stop saying Hot Pockets. I do that all the time.
Hey, Go-Gurt came out in 2001.
Yep, I still see that all the time. Yep, and the honey barbecue strips. Wow.
Mountain Dew Code Red. I used to game with my friends back online back in 2001. And right. We'd have long game sessions, so I lived on Mountain Dew Code Red.
It's funny that I don't... Do they still have the red Mountain Dew anymore?
Yeah.
Wow. Code Red's
still around.
Wow.
I can't drink it these days. It gives me instant heartburn.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. Huge hit with it. But now everything's about Taco Bell's Baja Blast.
Was the dog a thing back then, too? The Yo Quiero Taco Bell?
2001, maybe. Yeah, because I know they phased him out after a while because they considered it offensive.
Oh, that's too bad. I actually got my dad a Chihuahua that if you squeezed his ear, he would do the Yo Quiero Taco Bell.
Probably get some good money out of that these days.
Yeah.
Atkins was big in the early 2000s.
Yeah, the Atkins diet, I remember.
I tried that once when I worked in Bosnia and Herzegovina. Since we had, you know, free food, basically, we always went to the, you know, because it was the buffet there at the dining facility. And so I tried it for about a week and I said, oh, my God, no.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I could not eat that much meat and not have something else.
Yeah, I never tried that or the South Beach diet, believe it or not. So
I try not to use the fad diets because they're always changing and everything. It's like, yeah, you know, just eat better.
I just go with the more colorful your food is, the healthier.
Well, that's perfect because that segues right into the next thing I was going to bring up, Squirt colored ketchup from Heinz.
Yes.
Green and purple ketchups. Who marketed this thing? Who in their right mind was at the boardroom that day saying, you know what? We should change ketchup colors from red to green and purple, and that'll sell like crazy.
Again, you know, it's creative minds, man. I mean, it's just...
I think that guy got fired.
That's too bad. If that is the case, that's really too bad. I'm looking at the next one. Oh, the slang.
The slang of 2001. Go for it. Hit me with your best shot with the slang.
What's up?
What's up?
Yep, what's up? Or faux shizzle. I always say faux shiz, but...
Yep. Snoop Dogg was popular at the time, so faux shizzle was all over the place.
Yep. Faux shizzle my nizzle. Yep.
Yep.
And then, yep, talk to the hand because the face ain't going to listen. I remember that was a good insult.
Off the hook.
Mm-hmm. Getting crunk. Yep.
Man, you have a lot of good ones in 2001.
Oh, absolutely. Or burn. Or booyah.
See, interesting here, in the last couple podcasts I've done, hella has come up a couple times. And the thing is, I lived in California before coming to Colorado. And I never in my life, I don't remember ever hearing hella. And apparently it's a West Coast thing.
Me neither, believe it or not. I never heard hella.
It's become, in my past two podcasts, both of them have been like, well, past two adult podcasts, hella was brought up both times and I'm like, I don't remember hearing that at all.
Neither do I, actually, so that's okay.
Oh, well, whatever.
Exactly. What if? Heard that plenty too.
Sup's one I still use today, just plain old sup.
Yeah, instead of what's up, sup. I still say that every so often, so.
Well, that's pretty tight.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Oh man, you got a lot of good ones. Booyah!
Yeah, booyah!
Yeah, it's a Cyborg's catchphrase. Yeah.
I think there's at least one person around who will say that every so often.
Noob. You know, that was for me. I was a gamer, so noob. You know?
I was going to say, yep. And I think, I wonder, I can't remember, they ever create a character. I kind of, noob. There may be actually a character in it, one of the games who is noob, believe it or not.
Man, you got so much good lingo or good slang from 2001. It's not fair. I did the 70 or the 85 one the other day, and we only had like six.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm actually really curious, yeah, about the noob thing. I'll probably be looking that up after I get off of here.
Okay, how about fads? You know, fads in 2001.
Yeah, let's see. Oh, Heelys. I remember. I never had them, but oh, I saw the kids with those all the time, running through like the aisles. You having them? I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh, they're still here today.
I know. I never had a pair because I never could rollerblade or roller skate very well. So, yeah, that was definitely not. I would have broken my ankle or my leg if I would have put those on.
I don't see the kids just don't fall on their face, but hey, they get used to them real fast.
Yeah, that's what they say. So my balance is not so good.
Yeah, I had a Razor scooter back then. I actually won it in some competition. Worked at one place, I would actually use my scooter to go from desk to desk because I was an IT, and I'd scoot, between desks.
That's cool. And I'm looking at, yep, I had a Tamagotchi. Yep, I remember I had those virtual pets. Mm-hmm. They showed up in my stockings for Christmas quite frequently. I remember Tamagotchi was definitely one of them.
I think a lot of people had those. Those were, you know, you had to feed them all the time. And they'd
play with them, yep. Keep them at four hearts before they either just passed away or whatever.
You let yours die? Mine's still going.
Or, you know, it would freeze on you. Like, I think like at some point, I don't know if it was just like the Tamagotchi would fly off to another planet or something like that. You'd see him in the rocket ship, and then the only way to get him back would be starting over.
I don't think I ever made it that far with those.
Yeah, I made it far enough. Like with my virtual dog, I always, you know, got him into adulthood, but then, you know, it would just freeze on me and then I'd have to start all over again. So
let's see, some other trends or other fads in 2001.
Well, I didn't get into Jackass till the movie came out. So
yeah,
with those stunts and Napster. Napster
was great. I love Napster. Take forever to download a song, but you could download it.
Oh, but it was worth it.
DVD players going mainstream? I would have thought it would be sooner than this. I remember DVD prices were like crazy, though.
I know. I think, believe it or not, we got a DVD player. I don't remember what year it was, but might have been 1999. I don't remember when it started, but it was like the new way to watch everything. And it took me a while to go from VHS to DVD.
It's like the joke they have in Men in Black where they talk about having to continually update your collection, you know? So I got this new device we're going to be going to, and I got to buy the Beatles White Album again. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know how many versions of like Ghostbusters I've owned, you know, VHS and DVD and Blu-ray and digital. And
yeah, I could say that about some of the Disney stuff. Like I had all those classic Disney VHSs, and then as they were released, I think I have like seven different versions of Snow White. So
yep. I've got laser discs down in the downstairs still of Disney stuff.
Yep. Yeah, my wife and I have found a few of those at antique malls.
Oh, see, I'm old.
That's no judgment. You're not that old in my book, and I would not say that.
Let's see here. Beanie Babies were on the way out.
Yes. I remember when the end was released at, like, I think that was turn of the century. So
Yeah, people were relying on Beanie Babies to be their college fund or their kids' college fund. And
I know. And it's like, I was an avid. I will say, I was a very avid Beanie Baby collector. I actually was.
Well, I collected, and I still have them in my office there, the Disney equivalent, the Disney Beanie Babies and stuff. So I've got a bunch of those.
That's cool. I don't know if I ever got any of those, believe it or not. But yeah, the Beanie Babies, I think I was gifted one in 1997, and then I just got hooked.
There's a good, fun documentary on it. Not documentary, but it's like a semi-documentary.
I know what you're saying. We, wife and I saw that. I don't remember what it was. I don't remember the name of the show, but I know they did a whole episode on Beanie Babies. I do know what you're talking about.
This is a whole movie with Zach Galifianakis and...
oh, really?
Oh, God. Why am I drawing a blank? Parker Posey.
Wow.
It's on Apple TV Plus. I think it's the Beanie Baby craze or the Beanie... It's Beanie something. Anyhow, it goes over the entire thing, and basically... they could have actually continued. They could still be a thing today if the lead guy had understood the idea of marketing and limiting runs and things like that. Instead, he just printed, or made, and didn't get that. Then they just dropped in value. The bottom thing on our fads list here, I don't know why it's the bottom, reality TV obsession.
Yeah, why? It's...
What was your experience with the reality TV in 2001? Because I've got something that I wanted to bring up with that.
It was mostly, again, I saw a couple Fear Factors here and there, but Survivor was 100% my reality obsession.
Mm-hmm. See, prior to Survivor, there was Road Rules and there was Real World. Those were kind of the two real first reality shows.
Correct, yeah.
Survivor was really one of the first competitive reality shows in regards to a prize.
And Big Brother, yeah.
Well, that's it. Big Brother came shortly thereafter.
And exactly.
I watched season one and two of Big Brother, and that was the last season I had seen up until recently for reasons that shall remain disclosed. But right. Thing is, back then, you would actually, for Big Brother, call in to vote for the person you wanted to be eliminated from the show.
Yeah, yes. So
the viewers were the ones that determined who went home.
Exactly. That was season one, I think, right?
Yeah. And two.
Yeah, no, season two introduced head of household and the cutthroat competition stuff.
Well, the reason I bring this up is because prior to Survivor, you know, Borneo in particular, so airing the year before, to Survivor Borneo, there wasn't another show like it in the United States. Obviously, Survivor is based off of the British show that Mark Burnett had, but it was like a huge thing. And what I said earlier, that this finale of Borneo with the craziness, well, actually, I didn't say it earlier. We had a conversation beforehand. The craziness of it, the real way that Sue Hawk responded to Richard and Kelly Wiggles, you know, Richard
yes.
was like jaw dropping. It was like, holy cow, you know, and
she really let him have it. I loved it.
Oh yeah. I got goosebumps and legitimately got goosebumps on that show, which is why for the longest time, I was a huge American Survivor fan. You know, I say American Survivor because I still watch the Australian Survivor because it's still great.
Yes.
I have stopped watching the U.S. Survivor just because I have not liked the season in forever. But, you know, it was just something that was so different, so crazy. And that it really was the root, you know, the seed that grew the 1,000 reality shows we have today.
And reality competition aspect. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So,
and I mean, it's earned its spot. And I think it's won Emmys multiple times for outstanding competition. And I know Jeff Probst has won the host role. I know he's won that at least 4 or 5 times. So,
yeah, now it's a lot of times it's The Amazing Race takes that spot.
Yep. I love Race too.
Yeah, me too. I don't know if Amazing Race came out in 2001 or 2002.
I think, honestly, it might have been in the early part of 2002.
Yeah.
I think it was January. It was like one of the first quarter 2002, I think.
So, I mean, some of these shows that we connect on that we've watched, you know, both you and I have watched over these years have been, you know, straight from this period of time.
Yep. And again, it's like I said at the beginning, you start watching and then you become so invested in the cast and, you know, the competition aspect. And then you're like, okay, when's the next one?
Yep, exactly. Well, and right now I'm waiting for the Australian Survivor versus the world, you know, the United States versus Australia versus South Africa. I'll watch that one because it's got some of my favorite Australian players in it.
I know, man. I just, oh my God. And we spent however many weeks watching David kick butt on Deal or No Deal Island. So
David, I'm torn on David. I've got feelings about David.
I love the Golden God, man. He is, and the way he played it off. I mean, the way he played it off on Deal or No Deal Island was like, I mean, Parvati knew who he was. It's like, I'm like, are you guys serious? That's like, oh, that's right. Because again, and this is also a point of bitterness for me, the fact they had, I think, what, 3 or 4 seasons of Australian Survivor on Paramount Plus at one point, and then they took it away.
Yep. I was excited too, because I was telling all my friends, you got to watch Australian, it's so much better. And then they took it away.
Me too. Like,
yeah.
Yep. It's funny. I think it was either 21 or 22. I was at Discovery Cove with Sandra, Johnny Fairplay, and a couple of them. We were all talking about Australian Survivor, and then I'm like, Australia's better. And then both of them looked at me, and Fairplay was like, you're right.
Yep.
And I'm like,
as a matter of fact, I've got Matt coming on the podcast here soon, at the end of this month, probably, from Australian Survivor. He's going to do one episode with me.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah. So
I wish they'd have more of them at the event. And
I'm pretty much the one that got into the event in the first place, because I got Flick and Phoebe to come to one. I missed that year. I got Annalise, Benji, Jericho, and
you get Stoney 1 year?
Henry. No, I didn't get Stoney and Henry to come to one. Actually, I was chauffeuring them all over the place that year.
You know, oh, okay.
You know, so I've gotten a few of them, you know, to come to the event. But yeah, I agree. I wish more would come, because so we covered that pretty well. Let's get things down to the end of this end of things here, because we got a few things that happened in 2001. You were 14 years old. How did September 11th affect a 14-year-old?
It was the craziest thing. I literally remember it was actually the sixth day of high school when that happened. It was my sixth day, and we ran it like classes. It was a 6-day cycle. You know, you have day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6, then back to day 1 where I went to high school. But yep, that was the final cycle. And I just remember I finished, I think it was computer class, and everyone's like all crowded around the TV in the cafeteria, and I'm like, what in the world is going on? And then I see the fires. I'm like, what happened? And then lo and behold, I found out about the Pennsylvania one. I had a cousin in college, literally right around there.
Oh, yeah.
And all I could think is, I hope he's okay. And I mean, you know, I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have coins on me. But yeah, they closed us down by like noon that day. That was insane. And then obviously, well, okay, nope, this was the year before the Bush president, or the recount.
Oh, yeah.
From the Bush presidency, but that was 2000, so, but, yep, he was, I do remember him being sworn in January, so.
George W. Bush, and he get a strong stance against terrorism.
Yep, and him throwing, still one of my favorite baseball moments. I mean, again, I don't get into politics with people, but when he threw the first pitch in the World Series that year, it was a great moment, and threw a perfect strike. That was one of the best baseball and World Series moments. We were all united, and I don't like the Yankees, sorry, but I did root for them that year in that World Series because of everything that the state had gone through and the fact that they couldn't pull it off. I'm like, what? Come on. Yeah. Even again, going for 4 in a row. And I mean, they took it literally to the 11th hour that year.
So September 11th, obviously it affected everybody. And I can imagine a 14-year-old just as much.
Yep.
We declared a war on terror, obviously. Prism.
And anthrax.
As a 14-year-old though, would you have been following some of these stories like the anthrax attacks?
I mean, we had Channel 1 in school. So, you know, we heard, you know, the global news, we heard, you know, certain things, every morning in homeroom. So did I follow it on the internet and stuff? Not really, no. But, you know, I had heard things here and there. I will say that. I remember Enron. I do remember, you know, Enron's collapse. I remember when that happens.
Okay, that's a weird one for a 14-year-old, but yeah.
Only because I can't remember if the person who taught world history, he was a huge buff and would always, you know, give us the current events on things, so.
Oh, good. So just like I do. Yeah, I do that in my classes as well. We usually start the day out with watching the short news recap.
Yeah, my history teacher, my freshman year of high school, he'd always, you know, try to catch us up on all that stuff. And so I remember when Enron collapsing was a huge deal. So
any other 14-year-old ones here? I'm looking through the rest of the stories and
wow, Wikipedia launched that year. That's insane.
Wikipedia in 2001. It's only 24 years old. Feels like it's older.
I thought for sure it might have been, but I guess I was wrong about that. I am proud to say I never used Wikipedia as a source when I would do reports.
Ah, and I give you kudos and claps for that one.
I utilized Spark Notes when it came to books. I did utilize those, but when it came to information, like when we had to do bibliographies, I never used Wikipedia. So I'm proud to say that.
I give you a big round of applause.
Well, thank you for that.
Oh, Windows XP came out in 2001.
Oh, wow.
I loved Windows XP back then. Yeah. It was a memory hog, but it was good.
I know. I was about to say, then you really wish back then you had those external hard drives. One thing I always joke about, it's like, you know, think about it. You would put all your photos. I don't remember when the first digital camera came out, but I think they were kind of a thing back then.
Yeah, probably some early iterations.
You download all of them and put them on there, and then it's like, oh man, I'm out of storage because I have all these photos. And it's like, why in the world would I get rid of this and this? They're too good.
Well, and you look at it now, and like I just recently went on a trip to Alaska, and I took 1,500 pictures on my phone. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, my wife and our family went to Gatlinburg a few years ago for about a week, and we had about, I don't know, a lot. I'd say at least 3,000 to 5,000 over the course of those days. Yeah, we went everywhere, man. We were at, you know, Pigeon Forge, the island, Dollywood, Opryland. We were everywhere.
Nice. Sounds like a fun trip.
It was, absolutely.
Okay, so I think we've come to the end of the news there. This is the point in the show where it's kind of like any last memories or any last thing as a 14-year-old that you experienced that we haven't covered that you wanted to bring up or talk about.
Graduated middle school in Florida and then moved back to Baltimore that year. I mean, it was big changes for me that year.
No more palm trees?
Nope. Yeah, I lived in Boca Raton from 1993 to 2001, and then 2001 through 10 was back in Baltimore. So
great. Well, the one last question I do like to ask my guests every single time is, what piece of advice would you give your 14-year-old self now, knowing what you know, that you could apply to your 14-year-old self?
I think about this a lot, to tell you the truth. And I think the thing I would say is don't run through life. Enjoy it. Because I admit, I was one of those kids who was in such a hurry to grow up. I really was. I just wanted, because of, I won't get too into this, but the household I was in and, you know, I'll just quote unquote ridiculous rules that were put on me. I was in such a hurry to turn 18 and to be on my own, but I think I took a lot of it for granted. I really did. Not that, but I missed the big picture. Let's just put it that way. I will say, didn't, you know, I was like so focused on getting good grades and wasn't trying to be the best. I mean, I made Dean's List and honor roll frequently. I'm proud of that, but I wish I would have maybe held back a little bit. Maybe had a little more fun, like with organizations. And I wish I discovered dance a lot sooner than I did. That's for sure.
That's probably a good outlet.
It wasn't until I think 2004 or 2005 when Richard Gere was like in his prime with Chicago, Shall We Dance, and all of that. And then to see him do it and thinking, I could do that.
Cool.
So.
Excellent. Okay, well, that sounds like some pretty solid advice. You know, enjoy the time.
Yeah.
Don't speed through it. I like that.
This is a way later song. I don't know what year it was. And I see it on Facebook all the time where it's a picture of a school hallway with like the lockers on it. And it says, you're going to miss this. You're going to want this back. And you're going to wish these days didn't go by so fast.
Oh, yeah. I tell my kids that all the time. I say, your high school years, be it good, be it bad, these are the ones you're going to look back on.
Yes. And that's also a song, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Trace Adkins.
Oh, okay.
Yep. It's a great song. I remember he promoted that, believe it or not, while I was doing my Disney internship. I think it was Celebrity Apprentice finale where that was the release of that song. So.
Huh. Celebrity Apprentice. Well, we could go off on a whole different tangent there, but we're going to wrap things up instead. So
yeah, that's all right.
So if you want to hang out for a couple minutes after, I'm going to go ahead and go through the outro and
okay.
Wrap things up. And then we will chat for a couple more minutes and be done for the day.
Yes, sir.
I will say it has been a complete pleasure having you on here. It's really been great getting to know you more.
Yeah.
I look forward to actually hanging out with you this year at the event. You know, again, that's Over the Edge Celebrity Weekend out in Celebration, Florida. And so come join us. You know, come meet your reality show, you know, people and us.
Yes.
So, and anyhow, it's been a great pleasure having you here. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks again for having me, man. I love it.
Of course. Cowabunga, time travelers, that's going to do it for this ride in the Tubular Time Machine. Thanks for cruising back through the raddest years with us. We hope you had as much fun as we did cranking up the nostalgia, reliving those gnarly tunes, iconic movies, epic video games, and all the pop culture goodness that made growing up totally awesome. Major shout out, mondo thanks to my weekly co-host for another righteous trip down memory lane. Your stories and vibes make this retro journey even more bodacious. Want to keep the party going? Hit us up on social media. We're talking Facebook, Instagram, maybe even a little MySpace just for the LOLs. And don't forget to cruise over to TubularTimeMachine.com where you can catch past episodes, send us your memories, or suggest a year you want us to fire up in the flux capacitor for next time. And hey, if you're digging the ride and want to help us keep this retro machine rolling, head over to buymeacoffee.com/MrAz. Your support helps fuel future episodes and keeps the good vibes alive. Until next time, keep your mixtapes fresh, your VHS rewound, and your vibes totally tubular. In the case of 2001 lingo, peace out. Catch you on the flip side, dudes and dudettes.
Hey there, dudes and dudettes. It's time to rewind from neon nights to that vintage vibe. Mixtapes, arcades, butterfly clips. We're cruising the past with totally rad tips. Break it up. We're going back to side bracelets and a killer soundtrack from Pearls to Pops. It's a past is always rad.